Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with SportingBet.com.
Football Weekly. Today, after a weekend featuring more big misses than an opera company, the pod asks, what's the difference between Nicholas Bentner v Burnley and Sharon Stone in Basic Instinct? Well, they were both shocking Nicholas performances, but in the Burnley game we got to see a full 73 minutes of the hairy Elsewhere, we round up all the FA Cup action as Villa, Chelsea and John Terry in particular roll up their sleeves. We look forward to the Champions League, Man United, Milan, Fiorentina, Bayern, Arsenal, Porto and Sid Lowe tells us all about plucky Leon's visit to Real Madrid, who in a big weekend in Spain have retaken the Liga lead. There's Championship news, there's posts and a nod to the midweek Premier League games, all in Football Weekly Classic. Right then. Hello everybody. Joining us today, we have Barry Glendenning.
Hello.
Hi, Barry. Sean Ingle.
Hello, James.
Hi, Sean. John Ashton.
Hi, James.
Hi, John. You're the odd one out today.
As I'm not in a whistling flute, yeah.
Yeah, extraordinary scenes here in the Football Weekly Pod because both Sean and Barry are wearing shirts and ties. Listeners, you may not be aware of what a extraordinary, what a unprecedented event that is, but why, Barry, why?
We're up in court.
No, why?
We're going to the Sports Journalism Association Awards due this evening.
Ooh.
Or could well be at them.
You're nominated, aren't you?
I am. I'm nominated in a category for Best Live Blog, and I'm up against some dude from the BBC, a computer program, Hawkeye, and a human computer program, namely Rob Smythe.
So Rob Smythe, also for a Minute by Minute?
I presume so, yeah.
You're nominated for a Minute by Minute, are you?
Well, yeah, it's a Minute by Minute and Tour de France coverage and tennis coverage or something.
Right. Yeah. Okay, that's extraordinary. Yeah. And you were complaining, actually, about the sweatshop conditions that you have to produce these later nominated works of genius.
Well, yeah, yesterday I had to do 2 Minute by Minute reports back to back. It's not the first time I've got...
It's awful.
I didn't even have a chance to go for a comfort break, as they call it. And I have shooting pains on my right arm,
Barry,
at the moment because of
your little blistered fingers.
6.5 hours straight typing is
It's hardly working in a Bangladeshi sweatshop for $1 a day, Barry. Like.
Right. But maybe one day you'll
not
get your break.
Exactly different, I'd imagine.
Right. Okay, then. And, well, there you go. John, you didn't pick up any nominations at all?
No.
All right, then.
Well, no.
Did you?
No.
Oh. But you've got your own thing going on, haven't you? Have we got past G yet or not?
The own awards in my head that I win every time.
No, it was a very, very poor attempt at a segue to the letter G.
Yeah.
Yeah. Anything?
Nope. Oh. Well, actually yes. I tell a lie. Yeah. We're going to go to a gallery next week. Shift things forward.
Lovely. We'd best move on, eh? Because there's been lots of football played and lots of football to play. We're beginning, I think, with the FA Cup. We now know the semi-finalists. They are Aston Villa, who will be taking on Chelsea. Portsmouth, who will be facing either Fulham or their old friend Harry Redknapp and Tottenham. And, of course, Tottenham and Fulham are replaying their particular Round 6 game. When's that? On Wednesday, in 2 weeks' time. Oh, just over. Now, you're putting together five things you discovered this weekend, or five things we learned this weekend, and one of those is apropos of Villa Reading. Sorry.
Well, yeah, I mean, in terms of the game itself, I felt quite sorry for Reading because they were unlucky to go in at half-time only 2-0 up. And then Martin O'Neill must have given his team a horrendous rollicking because they came out for the second half and absolutely tore into Reading for 15 minutes, scored 3 goals in 10 minutes. And then Reading started to dominate again and possibly... should have, you know, deserved a draw at least, I think. But anyway, they go out of the competition, they can hold their heads high. But one thing I noticed from watching all their games in the Cup this season, they have a young Icelandic player, a midfielder called Gylfi Sigurdsson. And in my opinion, he is by far and away the best man to deliver a dead ball anywhere in the UK that I've seen. He takes their free kicks, he takes their corners, and every ball he sends into the mixer causes havoc.
Mm. What's his name?
Gylfi Sigurdsson, he's a 20-year-old Icelandic young man, and he's been with Reading. He only broke into their first team last season, I think.
Right.
Having been out on loan for a couple of other clubs, Shrewsbury and someone else who I can't remember.
Right.
But he's definitely one to watch, and I'd be astonished if he doesn't go on to make a very, very big name for himself, because he's a good player as well.
He's got quite a big name already. That's stupid, I know. But anyway, Portsmouth
well done to them, eh? Despite everything, all their travails and tribulations, they beat Birmingham. And as people point out, a very real prospect they could be both in administration and the Europa League at this point.
They could be, yeah. It'd be remarkable. I think they'd be the first top-flight team to, if they did win the Cup, to do that and go down. I mean, Brighton almost did it in 83 when they lost to United in the replay. It wasn't a very good game. I thought Portsmouth deserved it. There was the one big element of controversy was the Birmingham's goal late on that was disallowed. Moments later, FIFA announced that they definitely wouldn't be instituting goal line technology, and that was quite
they've
nice.
They've abandoned all further experimenting.
It was a nice juxtaposition. Hmm. And it was strange because the ball was 2 foot over the line.
Right. Now, does that include video technology? I mean, a fifth official with a telly, that's included in their abandonment.
It is, although I've been at games, and there have been games where the fourth official is clearly...
Yeah, Raphael Honigstein's contention is that they just do it on the sly.
Yeah, well, I was at the World Cup final where clearly Zidane, the headbutt incident with Materazzi, was told Marcello Lippi came to the press after the game and said that to us.
Right.
So I think, I mean, the FIFA aren't really being honest here, but Sepp Blatter has this... There's this belief in the primacy of the, you know, it's like the infallibility of the referee, like the Pope. And we all know what Catholic priests get up to.
Hey?
Although not the Pope, I hasten to add. Although he might have done.
I have this sneaking regard and admiration for...
Red card for you, Ingo. Sorry, Barry.
I have this sneaking admiration and I just can't help it for Blatter's obdurate refusal to even countenance... having goal line technology, you know, he just flies in the face of all logic, will not have any truck with it whatsoever. And up to a point, I kind of agree with him because there's no logical reason not to have it. But football is all about chaos. Football fans love a whinge. And if we remove the referee's margin for error, we're going to remove a huge amount of the reasons football fans have for whinging.
Oh, and, no. I think the whinge gland will be equally active, even if there was
a
perfect referee. They'll find a million other things to complain about. Mm. Now, you were at Fulham Spurs, John, but nothing to report, I imagine.
No, it was pretty dire. Yeah.
Chelsea Stoke, then? You see that?
No.
All right. Well, Frank Lampard scored one. And then John Terry. I keep thinking, I bet John Terry's quite a decent bloke if you actually got to know him. You know, I mean, he gets into all sorts of trouble and his family members are a little bit controversial. But he's probably a decent sort. But then he keeps coming out and doing things like this bizarre celebration and this shirtless post-game interview. T. Cronell posting in, or tweeting actually, showing how happy was BJT to receive... What's the B for?
Brave,
okay. The Man of the Match award on behalf of Alex. And does he have to do his post-match interviews naked now? Barry.
Well, he wasn't naked. He was very conspicuously wearing his captain's armband,
yes.
The same one he pointed to when he rushed over to his fawning acolytes in the Chelsea support, pulled up his sleeve as if about to receive a BCG vaccination and pointed pointedly at the armband. I mean, I'm beginning to think that Terry is actually a deeply troubled individual. Either that or he's completely brain dead, because... He's shown no sign of any kind of humility, any kind of acknowledgement that he may have done wrong. And I say this as someone who could not care less where he dips his winkle. Doesn't bother me in the slightest.
Mm. His message is what?
His message is, I'm the captain, I should be the England captain. It was an act of...
They can't take this one away from me.
Disrespect for Fabio Capello. And just, to me, confirmed that whatever your thoughts on the England captaincy, he was right to be relieved of it.
Yep, okay, that's the FA Cup, and we mentioned the semi-final draw, and that's all to come in April. In part two, brief part one today, we're going to be moving on to the weekend's Premier League action, and looking forward to the big Champions League showdowns. Woof!
Football Weekly from The Guardian, in association with SportingBet.com.
Now, Man United took on Wolves and won, thanks to that fellow Paul Scholes. Well done to him. But not all the news was good. Michael Owen. Some people are saying his career is over.
Hasn't it been for a couple of years?
Yeah, but he...
Well, it is. It's a great tragedy. He's out for the season.
Yes.
More problems with his hamstring. We don't know what... It's a great tragedy that someone who looked so good 10 years ago, 12 years ago now, God, is it that long... there's consistent injury problems and is going to be out again for several months.
Right.
I don't think, you know, Sky, I think, were leading the story saying that his chances of being in the World Cup squad were finished. I don't think he had the slightest hope of being in the World Cup squad. So
seems not. But he wasn't the only casualty. Sir Alex Ferguson blaming the hamstring injury, I believe, right, saying on the recent game they played at Wembley, the Carling Cup final. Is that right?
And yeah,
saying
and
that Wayne Rooney was also...
Because you were asking before...
Well, he says that the Wembley pitch
covered
him.
In bear traps or...
No, I think they might have vipers or something nestling in the six-yard box. I don't know. But yes, so... But anyway, Rooney missing the Wolves game because of knee knack post-Wembley. And in some doubt for the visit of Milan this week. Although the latest reports are more favourable, I believe. Of course, he played such a fundamental part in their victory at the San Siro, historic victory. Those two-headed goals. Wes Brown as well, broken foot.
Yeah, out for the season, will miss the World Cup.
Right.
But Glenn Johnson could even play against Wigan tonight. But, you know, Gary Neville might be rubbing his hands at the moment, thinking he might yet get another...
But how about Man United then, as they prepare to face Milan on Wednesday night? See, the Italians are not very positive about this. A lot of positive noises coming out of the Milan camp. Leonardo saying everybody, we're going to do it. And Ronaldinho's been reborn and he's had a couple of years in the darkness. But this is a team that can turn it around. But, you know, they're aware of the fact that even though United's record at home hasn't been great in the Champions League,
it's a big ask. You know, Milan will have to go there and win by two goals unless they win.
Nobody's ever done that.
No one's ever done that.
In the Cups.
Saw Milan against Rome and I thought they played quite nice stuff, but there wasn't much end product. And it would be a big shock, I think, if United lost by two goals.
They didn't have Pato at the weekend. There is talk that he will be back, at least on the bench. There's going to be a test later on today about that. In which case, he would be out on the right with Boriello and Ronaldinho on the left. Otherwise, it's going to be that man Huntelaar, who was in Nicholas Bentner-esque form. In terms of finishing on Saturday night. And David Beckham's the other option that they bring him. And then they had him late on in the game at Roma. And I thought he looked a lot more effective, actually. It might sound surprising. But yeah, actually was putting some decent balls in and all that. But that 0-0 draw at Roma keeps him very much in the hunt in Serie A. But there you go. Anyway, so you think Man United will hold on to that one comfortably, do you?
You expect so, particularly if Rooney plays. If he doesn't, Milan might have a sniff. But I'll do that.
I think the other thing about this is that at San Siro, they kind of dictated the pace of the game to an extent. And they were able to play at their rhythm and tempo. But I think the expectation is that at Old Trafford, it's going to be a very different kind of football they play. And the mind returns to Roma's visit there with Luciano Spalletti and a certain 7-1 outcome for the home side when they were basically just torn apart at extreme speed. Anyway, Arsenal, meantime, on Tuesday night, are facing Porto. All sorts of controversy, Barry, over the goal in the first leg and the free indirect free kick and all that kind of thing. But Porto lost 4-0 there at the Emirates last season, didn't they, in the Champions League?
Yes.
Yes, they did.
They did.
So even though Fabregas is apparently in doubt...
It's an interesting one because I think Porto might go there feeling quite confident, even though their away record against English teams is terrible. I think it does depend hugely on Fabregas, whether he plays. I mean, he's scored 14 goals in the Premier League this season. He's had 15 assists, which I think is more than anyone else. I was speaking to Opta earlier and they were telling me that he's missed 20 Premier League games over the last two seasons. With him, they've asked the one sort of 62% of the time. Without him, it drops to 50%, which is not a big difference. But I think he is crucial to how Arsenal play. And Arsenal have got a lot of injuries at the moment. They do look fragile. On Saturday, they weren't particularly fluent against Burnley. You know, but as you said, Bentley was horrendous. And it, you know, it's not a particularly easy game. So the mind goes back to when they lost over two legs to PSV Eindhoven, you know, a team that weren't up to that much, but Arsenal, you know, didn't win. And you could easily see that being a draw tomorrow night.
John?
Yeah, I think the loss of Fabregas will be more important to Arsenal than Rooney is to Man United this week, in as much as United don't have to go and win. And so obviously not having Rooney in the attack, you know, is not necessarily the blow that it might be, whereas Arsenal do need to go and win. And Fabregas is such an important part of their attacking play. You look like you're inflating, but what are you doing? You're slowly getting larger
Track
and larger.
With misery,
oh,
actually.
That's what it was, sorry.
Really?
It'd be interesting to see. I think Arsenal will go through, but it might not be easy. Maybe an extra time job.
And what about the rebirth of Theo Walcott, hey?
Well, yeah, I was getting very wound up, actually, on Saturday night watching Match of the Day. player has one good game, now he's a good player again. Player has one bad game, oh, he's terrible. It's just, you know, I have this instant reaction one way or another. We all know his qualities, and, you know, it's a question of whether he can produce them on a consistent basis.
Now, there's other Champions League action coming up this midweek as well. Fiorentina taking on Bayern. Fiorentina very unlucky to lose at the Allianz Arena after an extraordinarily offside goal. It was about 3 or 4 yards offside, and ironically, they lost this weekend at home to Juventus with another offside goal, a key factor. The other game, though, Real Madrid against Lyon. Lyon, who take a 1-0 lead from the Stade Gerland into this game. Can they hold on to it? Let's dial up Sid Lowe in Madrid, eh?
Hello.
Hi, Sid. Some important questions to ask you today. Let's start with... Lyon really had Real Madrid's number at the Stade Gerland, I was just saying. Are the Madrid press, is Real Madrid worried?
I don't think they're worried. I mean, of course, there's a little bit of concern because they recognise the fact that they didn't score away from home and they've got to turn it around from 1-0. But the way they're playing at the moment, in particular the amount of goals they're scoring, means that I don't think they're especially concerned about it. And I must admit, I'm a little surprised how little has been said about the one thing that does hang over Real Madrid, and that is that if Olympique Lyonnais score a goal, then of course Madrid are forced to score three because they didn't score away from home. But if you look at their recent run, they've won 6 out of 6. They've scored 23 in their last 6 games. So they are scoring an awful lot of goals. The flip side of that, a little bit, is that if you look at the teams that have come to the Santiago Bernabeu this year that are actually any good, they've all scored goals. Milan scored 3, Villarreal scored 2, Sevilla scored 2. So there should be a little bit of concern there, but I think the way they're playing in attack suggests that they think they'll go through, and I must say, I think they're right.
Sid, it was a thrilling weekend in the Spanish League, particularly on Saturday night when Barca only drew with Almeria and then Real came back from 2 goals down to beat Sevilla.
Yeah, and what that's done is it's sent Real Madrid to the top of the table for the first time since the Clásico, but it's more than that. And it's a weird one, this, because you sort of look at this kind of coldly and you look at the stats, you look at the position in the league. This is a weekend in which absolutely nothing has changed, in a way. But at the same time, it's a weekend in which it seems like everything's changed. It feels like Real Madrid won the league on Saturday night. Now, that sounds absolutely ridiculous to say, with 13 games still to go, with Barcelona still to go to the Bernabeu to play in the Clásico. But that's the feeling about it. And one of the reasons is of course, that it's something intangible. It's the emotion of it, the fact that Madrid were 2-0 down, 1-3-2 in the 92nd minute. Nobody could watch that game and not be reminded of what happened when Real Madrid came from a couple of goals down against Espanyol a couple of seasons ago, and that took them to the league title. It's given them, I think, perhaps a little bit more belief than they had before. It's given them that sense that, hey, things are on our side. And also just that the performance was very, very good from Real Madrid. Now, the reason I say nothing's changed is because we're in this kind of weird situation now where Madrid have gone top on goal difference over Barcelona. But at the end of the season, goal difference doesn't count. At the end of the season, it'll be about head-to-head records. So right now, in terms of head-to-head, Barcelona are top in that they beat Real Madrid at the Camp Nou. But until the two sides have played each other twice, that doesn't count. So going into the game at the weekend, Madrid still had their fate in terms of league title in their hands by beating Barcelona in the Clásico. They now still have to beat Barcelona in the Clásico to make good this goal difference. So in that sense, nothing's changed. But there is a feeling that Barcelona are slipping slightly. They look tired. They're not playing quite as well. Whereas Real Madrid have come on really, really strong in the last 5 or 6 weeks.
Right. And that next Clásico is at the Bernabeu, isn't it?
On the 11th of April, yeah.
Wow. Where, of course, they got their bottoms handed to them last season, Real Madrid.
Yeah, and this is, I mean, you look back at the last 2 seasons. 2 seasons ago, Real Madrid beat Barcelona 4-2 at the Bernabeu, completely humiliated them. Barcelona were forced to do a guard of honour because Madrid had just won the league title the week before. Onto the pitch, they then completely battered Barcelona. Last year, we had a situation where Barcelona and Madrid were winning every week and very close to each other, but still that four, I think, was it four, maybe 5-point gap between the two. And everybody was saying, in Madrid at least, this is brilliant. Madrid will beat Barcelona, and then it'll only be 2 points. And then you'll see Barcelona bottle it. Well, Barcelona came to the Bernabeu, and rather than bottling it, they bottled Madrid over the head and just completely destroyed them.
Right.
So a lot will depend on that game. And I think it's a bit sad in a way that there's 13 weeks of the season to go, and it feels like there's only one. It feels like the only game that's going to matter is that one.
Yeah, on a similar note, Raken, a rare post from him this week, says, question for Sid. In England, every year there are complaints that the league is dominated by the same four clubs, but in Spain they've had 7 years of a two-horse race. Does this cause a lot of soul-searching about the quality of the league, or does the Madrid press cheer Madrid and the Catalan press cheer Barcelona, and that's as far as it goes, question mark.
Maybe not entirely true to say over the last 7 years. Yes, of course, that goes back to when Valencia last won it, and they won it twice in 3 years, I think in 2001 and 2003, if I'm not mistaken. Mm-hmm. I think so much, because we've had a period when Barcelona weren't the second best side. We've had a period when a couple of times Madrid haven't finished in the top two. And also the other thing is that one of the reasons why there's not a huge amount of soul searching is that, in fact, it's the media and its opinion formers that are part of the reason that this is the way it is. Barcelona and Real Madrid have such a huge advantage because they have individual television contracts, because they have a media that's only based on those two teams. And I think that means that it's more extreme even than it is in England, because not only is it a situation in which only these two teams look like they can win the league, now you sort of look at it and think, only these two teams can ever even win any games. It almost feels like it's not that no one can challenge them in the league, it's that no one can challenge them for any match, any weekend. This Real Madrid team is statistically the best in their history, and this Barcelona team is statistically the best in their history as well. And the flip side of that argument would be, well, that's because the rest of the league is probably the worst in history.
Also in Europe this week, of course, the Europa League. It'll be on Thursday evening, pretty much after our next pod goes up. So we could even, you know, give it a quick shout here. Fulham are taking on Juventus, Barry, in Turin. Juve, I mentioned earlier, coming off a 2-1 win away to Fiorentina that's left people quite bullish about their chances, especially because it saw Diego playing well and looking lively. And apparently he's changed his approach to the game, says Zaccarini, the manager. And everyone's saying what a great job Zaccarini's doing. He's weeded out some of the old deadwood, you know, the Cannavaros and Del Pieros and that. I know it's awful to speak of such great players in such terms, but he has done a great job in rejuvenating the team.
Do you think he'll get the job permanently now?
It's looking increasingly possible, also because he's cheap. And so are Juventus.
We know all about that on Football Weekly.
Indeed we do. And Iaquinta came back to action this week, so it's another option for them up front, which has been a major, major problem for Juve, lack of strikers. Barry?
Do you think Fulham have any chance of getting a result in Turin?
They have a very decent chance also, because Juve's defence is a little bit random at the moment. They've gone to three at the back, which obviously carries one or two risks. And Chiellini, who is their best and most reliable defender, has just gone out for about a month. So there are problems at the back for Juve.
And obviously this is a big European adventure for Fulham fans, without wanting to patronise them. But what the hell, let's patronise them. It is a big special occasion.
Plucky
for them.
Fulham, yeah.
But are Juventus, like, are they a bit sniffy about being in the Europa League, or
no,
are they
I
taking
think
it
any,
seriously?
Any kind of success anywhere, they'll be delighted to get, because it's been they've had to eat a lot of humble pie. And conversely, they still have a lot of appetite for success as a result. John?
I was just going to make the very similar point to Barry. Ooh. Fulham are very, very up for it.
Right.
They're billing it the weekend as arguably the biggest match in their history.
Right.
Although
you're right, this is exactly the same question.
Yeah. Danny Murphy suspended there, which is a bit big loss. But nobody would have expected them to get a result against Shakhtar over two legs.
That's very true. The holders, of course.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Also in action, patronising at the ready, Liverpool. Lucky Liverpool have got a European adventure together. Well done to them. They are hosting Lille, of whom we know very little.
I find it just incredibly difficult to give a toss about that game. Yeah.
Do you think they'll be up for that one?
Who?
Liverpool.
Who cares?
Sean, Liverpool?
I think they'll be up for it. I mean, if they win that game, they will be through to the last eight.
Yeah.
And why not? I mean, they're not going to win anything else this season. So.
That's for sure. Okay. We're looking forward to the Europa League here. In Football Weekly,
you just know Lille will come to Anfield and be rubbish.
Yeah.
Why'd you say that, Baz? I mean, they're fifth in the French League. They're only 4 points off Bordeaux. I think I'm right in saying. Why?
You think you're right in saying it because you just turned to that page in the paper?
No, but I haven't looked properly.
All right.
Because I suffer from a syndrome that makes me think French teams are habitually rubbish away from home in Europe.
Oh, you're all this old line again.
Lyon could be proving you wrong.
They could.
It's interesting because that's a clash of two of the big themes of the Champions League, that Real Madrid-Lyon thing this week, because French teams out to prove that they can make it past whatever it is we're in the last 16. And Real Madrid, equally, believes that the final this year is their destiny because it's held at the Santiago Bernabeu.
Well, I think it's a damning indictment of French teams everywhere, particularly in France, that it took constant snipes from me in this podcast to actually get them to get their fingers out and show that, hey, we're good enough to make in Europe.
Interesting. All right, that's the end of part two then. Coming up very shortly, though, John's going to be taking us through the latest from the Championship, and we're going to be listening to your posts, listeners, and talking about some of the other midweek games are coming up. Now, bit of an erratum section here. Jimmy Pop and Dave Lister pointing out that the At Least Barnes Could Rap banner held up at the Old Firm game last weekend was actually held up by Rangers fans, not Celtic one. Sorry about that. Merchandise Sports Optimator posted a rather interesting first pass at a Football Weekly shirt, Sean. What are you doing about it?
I'm in discussions with our head of merchandise. Hopefully we'll have something for the World Cup.
Really?
Hopefully.
All right, then.
There's two bits about that sentence I disbelieve.
Yes.
One, that we have a head of merchandise, and two, that Sean is in discussions with them.
Right. Well, that's exciting news, eh, listeners? Oh, this was excellent. Somebody posted in... somebody basically posted in a list of what would football managers be doing if they weren't football managers, with things like Tony Pulis, funeral director. Well, Happy Goth responded with a much better list and said, Tony Pulis, the man embodies pro-angler chic. Roberto Mancini would be a postman. I quite like that. Sir Alex Ferguson would be one of those old guys who rides his mobility scooter on the road and not the path. Tartan blanket over his knees. Rafa Benitez in charge of a leisure centre. Martin O'Neill would be an unpopular head of Year 5 in a state comprehensive. That's brilliant. Roy Hodgson would be a retired espionage agent and now full-time grandfather. Abraham Grant would be living in squalor and solitude after defecting during the Cold War. Nobody knows what he did before because nobody's interested. Except it goes on. Mick McCarthy, gamekeeper, used to be a para. Alex McLeish used to be quite high up in the Strathclyde Police. I love these little pen portraits. Very, very nice, Happy Goth. They made me happy, even if everyone else is staring at me in a mixture of disbelief and abject boredom. Men Call Me Phil discussing Freddie Adu's chances of getting to the World Cup with Dempsey, Holden and Davis all in injury doubt. And he asked, so what if he plays for the under-21s or a B international? Would, says Men Call Me Phil, would Adu like to be inside the B side? Which is... very nicely worked there. There were some comments about the Glazers this week, Barry. You and Raycombe went toe-to-toe.
Yeah.
Yeah, over a course of several hundred posts. Fascinating reading for the rest of us. Sean?
This probably doesn't sits well with Barry's psyche, but have you ever thought, Baz, that both of you could be right? You know, you could be right, the fact that a big protest at Liverpool-Man United game would have a big impact around the world. And Raycombe and others are right. The fact, you know... must have had a brilliant last few months. You know, they've increased
Manchester United supporters trust.
They've increased membership from 32,000 to 115,000. You know, they're basically doing a lot to help make United a better run club. You know, run by the grassroots, not three garden gnomes from America.
Right, well, they haven't had any impact
United are being run by three garden gnomes from America and will continue to be run by three garden gnomes from America
Let me read out one or two other voices on this most hotly debated of themes. UK Gringo, quoting Matt Scott, and pointing out that by the time their debt matures, the Glazers, with Man United, United could well have access to an absolutely phenomenal revenue source in terms of their online broadcasting.
Well, the idea is that broadband coverage will have improved immensely in the next 5 years, and there'll be more markets for the Glazers to make money, both in the UK and abroad.
Why don't you just set up a porn channel and then have done with it? It's an honest question.
Well, I've often said make that money about now, our website, 5 years. Because on the Guardian Sport website, it's all about hits and, you know, how to draw readers in. And if the idea of just writing better articles doesn't work, why not just fill the whole site with pornography?
Mm-hmm.
But apparently that's not the Guardian way.
That's why the John Terry, Wayne Bridge stuff was so popular. Because it's just about boobs and willies, isn't it, effectively?
Yeah.
All right, then.
The other problem with Barry's point about fans shouldn't turn up is that a significant number of United fans made the ultimate sacrifice. They abandoned their season tickets. They set up a new club in FC United, and a fat lot of good it did them.
Well, what do you mean? FC United was doing very well.
Well, yeah, but it didn't change anything. And your view that by not turning up for one game will change the world, Baz,
Well, that's not my view, so...
I think it is your view.
No, it isn't.
Well, what is your view, then?
Well, you seem to be an authority on what my view is. My view is on the message forum for all to see.
Yeah.
My view is, I don't really care what Manchester United fans do, to be honest, but I just think that this green and gold protest is a completely useless... it's not even a protest, it's a demonstration of loyalty for fans who like to be seen to be doing something but are too lazy to do anything that might actually achieve a result.
So what about the people that have joined MAS? What about the...
What about them?
They're doing something.
What?
They are joining an organisation that is trying to change the way United is run through, you know, and have strong links with the Red Knights, who are also trying to buy the club.
Until actually anything happens vis-a-vis the Red Knights or mass walkouts of fans, then probably we should put a moratorium on debating this issue here on the pod, although obviously post what you want. You too, Barry. Leeds, the subject of Leeds, the beloved aunt wants to know why we're not allowed to know who their owners are. It's a bit of a funny one, that, isn't
it? Because the Football League won't let us.
Yeah, and why is that?
Because the Football League won't let us.
Right. Okay. Ian Wright.
Am I right in thinking that the names of the owners of Leeds are known, not allowed to say
they are
who
known
they
to
are.
The Football League, but the Football League won't.
Are you suggesting that The Guardian, for example, knows who they are but can't print
information? We don't know who they are.
Bizarre. Sifo. On an equally bizarre note, posting and saying, I've just read Ian Wright's comment about Sean's contract at City and his performance in the friendly. Sifo's saying, I've got a very important question, is Ian Wright sane? Sean Wright, for instance, must be absolutely fed up with his dad. Can you imagine having your dad basically popping up in the media all the time saying, my boy this, my boy that?
Well, if my dad was responsible for the death ship that is
Live from Studio
5, I'd be embarrassed enough without whether he was sticking his neb into my business affairs or professional career anyway, because, I mean, that has to be the worst television show ever made. Wright's a buffoon, but I don't know what his son makes of it. It can't be helpful.
John Ashdown, meanwhile, people want to know your view on one or two events over the weekend in the Championship. JLQPR says, what's John's view on Warnock at QPR? The difference on Saturday, they had a 3-1 win, as you probably know, with West Brom, was quite incredible. The players actually put some effort in.
Well, that's what he does, yeah. I mean, as one of the QPR players said afterwards, he is a motivator, and he will get them organised, he will get them really fighting for the cause. Obviously, it's going to be too late this season, you'd think, for them to make a bid for the playoffs.
How many points are they off?
Oh, I'll have to look at the table, which is...
Sean's got the information. Sean, how many points are they off?
They're 12 points.
Which, yeah, I mean, it's
a lot of points.
It's doable, though, in the Championship, but I'd still be pretty surprised if they made that. But next season, it bodes well. He was doing a fantastic job at Palace, albeit sort of bolstered by a bumper crop of talented youngsters.
Right.
And they may well have made the playoffs this year.
But what are the odds that he'll still be there next season, the rate at which they go through managers?
They do go through them, although Neil's quite tenacious when he gets his claws into a job. He tends to stick it out for a while.
I believe Flavio Briatore has been shunted into the background as well, and I think it was him mainly who was responsible for interfering with the other managers picking the teams and hiring and firing. So if he's been sort of tied to a chair and had gaffer tape strapped around his head, then there's every chance Warnock will stay.
Interesting.
I thought actually the Crystal Palace chairman, or Simon Jordan, and then the chief exec or whoever, their comments about Warnock not having leaving because he didn't have the stomach for the battle ahead was quite unfair. But Warnock seems to be a profoundly unpopular man. I've never met him, but a lot of people seem to absolutely loathe him.
I think he's great. I mean, I'd probably feel differently were I, you know, say, fan of an opposing team from the same city or something like that. But as a chap, he's very, very affable, very personable.
He's always been good in press conferences. I've probably done at least a dozen games with him over the years, and he's always been really actually pleasant to the press and always gives you a good quiet as well.
Football is a soap opera. It's like EastEnders or Coronation Street, constantly ongoing meandering plot lines, and you need pantomime villains like that to keep it interesting.
One thing, as a slight aside, I have personal experience of the fact that it is quite hard to get out of Loftus Road once you're inside. After I did a night game there a couple of seasons ago.
They didn't lock you in, but...
I was stuck, and I phoned up my other half. I thought I was going to have to sleep the night on the pitch.
Right.
So I was wandering around the pitch, wondering what to do.
John, how did this
I'd just
happen?
Been
did you fall asleep in the...
No, I'd filed my report from the press box, because that's where the broadband worked, and everybody else was in the press room, and they'd all gone, and everybody had locked up. But anyway, it led to a bizarre phone conversation where I'd phoned my other half and said, Rach, I'm stuck in the ground. And she thought I'd fallen down a hole. to explain to her that it was a stadium. And eventually, I went through the players' tunnel,
right,
and got out there where players were still leaving. It was a frightening experience.
Right, with a slightly anticlimactic game. But
yeah.
All right. Politi, perfect record. Barry's comment, the number of black managers in the league has been halved by the tragic death of Keith Alexander. Why does Chris Hughton never get mentioned in discussions of black managers? And since we're on the subject, how about Newcastle and that 6-1 whomping of Barnsley?
Well, the Newcastle certainly thraked Barnsley on the weekend. Louise Taylor in her match report this morning points out that Chris Hughton went for the full Keegan by whacking a couple of wingers on and really getting forward. They're looking good, Newcastle. The big result, really, over the weekend was Nottingham Forest beating Swansea in the big tussle of third and fourth. 90th minute winner from Luke Chambers after a horrible error by the Swansea goalkeeper means Forest leapfrog West Brom, who lost at
QPR,
of yes. course, yeah. So, I mean, that's going to go down to the wire, the race between Forest and Albion. And it was a disappointing result for Swansea, who looked like they played quite well.
Yeah. Producer Ben wants to point out, Gutierrez whipped out his Spider-Man mask, which has been in his shorts for 2 years, presumably. No. Whiff, he says.
I didn't see it. Presumably it was smelling slightly bad.
Yeah.
It had been there for 2 years.
Yes. He took it out, of course, because he scored a couple of goals. Argentine international playing in the championship.
Wasn't there an Ecuadorian? Was it Ivan Cavidas?
Cavidas, yeah.
You see that?
Yeah. I think that was a
American
tribute
thing.
To his friend.
Have you ever taken out a Spider-Man
out of your shorts when you've scored?
Surely you'd take it out of your shorts
before you score. Yeah. Oh, dear. Also in action this week, one or two Premier League teams. And we haven't actually mentioned, vis-a-vis the Premier League, that terrific result for Everton on Sunday. 5-1 win over Hull. Michel or whatever, Arteta, very much banging, back and banging.
Yeah, absolutely. It's the first goals of the season. Everton have sorely missed him. I think it's very interesting now, the situation at the bottom, because Hull haven't had a little... little splurge a couple of months ago and now struggling again just like it did last season. And there's a big game with Sunderland against Bolton this midweek, and mm-hmm. that's a huge game as well for, even though Bolton did win at West Ham at the weekend. It'd be interesting to hear Barry's thoughts on that.
Sunderland only 3 points, Barry, off the bottom three, and Bolton, that fantastic win for them at West Ham.
Yeah, it was, but they have the wood on West Ham. They just, and Kevin Davis in particular, I think he scored on Saturday. It was his mm-hmm. eighth goal in 10 games against West Ham in all competitions. I wouldn't imagine Sunderland v Bolton would be too pretty, but yeah, it is a very important game. As I say, I've said many weeks ago that Sunderland are showing no sign of winning a game anytime soon, and that continues to be the case.
Mm, well, Hull, Burnley and Portsmouth at the bottom three, but you know, everybody up to, say, 14th place, West Ham. The four teams above the bottom three are West Ham, Sunderland, Wigan and Wolverhampton are all in some real danger there. Wigan are hosting Liverpool tonight, Monday night. Portsmouth, meanwhile, have a game in hand and are now only 5 points off safety. Now, I know that they do have this provisional 9-point penalty that is presumably going to be put into effect, but how much of a given is that, Sean?
From what I hear, it is a given, although, you know, Portsmouth keep claiming they're going to fight it.
Could they, if it doesn't go through, is there a chance they might actually beat the drop?
I think it's very... There's a lot of ifs there, James. I think it's very unlikely they'll stay up, but, you know, fair play to Portsmouth for the way they've fought back in the last couple of weeks.
Right, well, they've got another match with Birmingham, who, of course, they faced on the weekend on Tuesday night, as you mentioned, Sunderland hosting Bolton. And then on Wednesday, Burnley taking on Stoke.
But I mean, we said when Brian
Laws... This is the last thing in the pod, so let's end on a high.
We said when Brian Laws took over that it was a strange appointment.
Yes.
Nothing he's really done since then has shaken that belief. I think that's a huge game for Burnley. They had a very good home record. They do need to win that game.
Right, and Stoke, of course, so although they did lose in the Cup, have been looking fantastic in the league. Have they not put a great unbeaten record?
Fantastic's too strong a word.
But in terms of an unbeaten run, you know, they're not a pretentious side, or at least I think I'm right in saying
Arsenal
for them.
Arsenal beat them last time they played, and they're doing all right. They're in mid-table, but that's where they're going to end up this season.
Which I think is for them. As I say, they're not a side with huge pretensions, but to end up in that kind of position, they're 11th at the moment, is, I think, a victory for them, isn't it?
See, it's pretentious the same as
no, it's not.
Having huge pretensions.
No, it's not.
Because I have these visions in my head now of Rory Delap going around in a smoking jacket with a big cigar and a tassel.
Using a cravat to dry the ball. Yeah. Yeah. Yes, you're right. It was a schoolboy error on my part, and I can only apologise. Thank goodness it won't make the edit, eh? Great. That's it then for today. Don't think we missed anything out. If we did, perhaps we'll be able to come back and mop it up on Thursday when we look back also on the Champions League and all that in Football Weekly Extra. In the meantime, many thanks to producer Ben and to Sean Ingle, John Ashton and Barry Glendening, and you, the listener. Good luck tonight, Barry, and we'll be back on Thursday. Bye-bye.
We get a drunken fist fight, nothing else.
Football Weekly with James Richardson in association with sportingbet.com.